Better relations with Cuba might conjure up images of new travel destinations, maybe some great rum. For the Health and Human Services Department, it means an opportunity for partnership on public health topics. In fact, a memorandum of understanding between HHS and the Cuban Ministry of Public Health means the two countries are doing just that. For more on how the cooperative relationship will work, the Assistant HHS Secretary for Global Affairs, Ambassador Jimmy Colker. And Ambassador Colker, good to have you on.
Thank you for the topic and for including me.
I guess we should begin by saying you got your ambassador title by virtue of a long career at the State Department before coming to HHS.
That's right. It ended up with my chance to be ambassador twice, first in Burkina Faso and then in Uganda. So I was a diplomat for 30 years, but the last 11 years I've morphed into someone working on global health and global health diplomacy.
Well, Cuba is pretty close to the United States, but I imagine the health systems are very, very different. And so what is the basis of the cooperative relationship? How do you envision this working?
The memorandum that you referred to that we signed in June with the Secretary Burwell with the Cuban Minister of Health is an umbrella agreement, and it actually allows us to do quite a few things. But the basis for it is that the activities would be in the interest of both countries. This is not a development aid program at all. It's something which we see as improving the health of the American people by being able to get more information about and more collaboration with a near neighbor. That would certainly include epidemics and infectious diseases, but also research that the Cubans are doing, which we find very interesting in areas like cancer and diabetes.
Yeah, what research are they doing? Because you wouldn't think of Cuba off the top of your head as a place of great medical advance and research.
They're working especially in the biotech area, and they have developed, because it's been an autonomous market, they've developed a few products which are not yet available in the U.S., and one of the benefits of the Treasury decision in October to eliminate some of the economic controls over relations with Cuba include one that would allow Cuban-manufactured or Cuban-originated drugs to go through the same process for FDA approval that any other foreign compound would. There's still quite a few steps that need to be followed, but Cuba is no longer singled out as being unable to submit their research or products for FDA approval.
And do their products appear on markets outside of the United States that are also outside of Cuba?
They do, and in particular, there's an interest in one cancer drug that is now probably going to enter clinical trials prior to FDA approval. There's a U.S. partner and a joint venture on that. And also the work on diabetes, especially, they've had a very good record in being able to control infections, for instance, problems for feet and legs of diabetes sufferers, and they have much better record, in fact, than we do of being able to avoid amputations for severe complications from diabetes. So those are two products that Secretary Burwell did hear a lot about when she was in Cuba. But as any other product would, we have some rigorous standards in the U.S., and they'll have to go through the trials and make the case that these are safe and effective.
Now, will this agreement also involve people, say, from medical officials from Cuba coming and working in the United States and vice versa?
Well, the two programs for which Cuba is now eligible but had not historically participated or been eligible are the intramural research programs of the National Institutes of Health. So Cuban scientists could come and collaborate with American counterparts at NIH. And also the Epidemic Intelligence Service of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is the leading epidemiology training course around the world. But up to now, Cubans had not been eligible to send specialists to that course. They now will be eligible.
We're speaking with Ambassador Jimmy Colker, Assistant Secretary for Global Affairs at Health and Human Services. And recently, as you mentioned, there was a visit to Cuba by Secretary Burwell. What do you find the facilities are like in Cuba relative to those that you might find at a place like the NIH, state of the art?
Right. Well, Sylvia Burwell did visit in October and was able to visit a couple of facilities, a polyclinic, a basic health center, and a referral hospital, all in central Havana. So it's hard to generalize from those visits what facilities might be like throughout the country. But in the Cuban approach has been interesting for us because they have been able to achieve, for instance, 100% immunization rates among young children, to include, in the case of Zika, vector control officials at every polyclinic around the country, which has probably meant that they were able to prevent the spread of Zika more effectively than some of their neighbors. And those aspects were important for us to learn from. Cuba has, in fact, a surplus of trained medical personnel. They are sending people to other countries to provide clinical care. And again, the contrast between our system, which is quite good at the very high end of being able to develop innovative drugs, being able to treat people for specialized conditions, is also interesting to them because they admit that they don't have the level of referral and specialized medical care that they would like for complicated cases. But in terms of basic health care, they've been able to prolong life expectancy so that even without that specialized end-of-life care, Cuban longevity is equal to that in the United States. So they're different systems, but there are a lot of complementarities and a lot of ways that we think we can take advantage of lessons learned.
And getting back to the operational aspects of this agreement, of the Memorandum of Understanding, will there be people, say, from HHS or other agencies or components within HHS tasked to make this whole agreement happen?
Well, our office for HHS is the Policy and Coordination Office. So we've been working with the operating divisions of Health and Human Services and the Office of the Secretary to look at research opportunities, to look at training and joint surveillance of the kind that Centers for Disease Control and Prevention do, our Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, so that if there is an outbreak, we have better communication with Cuban counterparts and that we're sharing the knowledge that we do have and look at techniques that might be effective in both countries for controlling an outbreak like Zika.
But the time could come when we could see Cuban counterparts visiting campuses here in the United States, federal facilities.
That's right. There certainly, when the Cuban minister was here, he did go out to National Institutes of Health. So the visits have taken place. What we're looking for now are genuine joint interests of projects we can undertake that will have clear benefit to both countries. Because, again, this is not a political gesture. It's not a development program. It's something where we want to engage where there are advantages to the U.S. medical system, to our knowledge and our research capacity and our ability to treat Americans. So there's a diabetes meeting that is going to be taking place in the next few weeks. There's an additional meeting on cancer that will be taking place, both of these in Cuba, where we're sending high-level experts to be able to dialogue with their counterparts and see what if there are more next steps. We've taken a few based on the secretary's visit, but there are other opportunities, and both sides, I think, have researchers and professionals who are interested in greater collaboration on areas they're already working on.
And one last area I wanted to ask you about was something that Sylvia Burwell mentioned in her blog, and that is Cuban work on Alzheimer's disease.
Right. Both countries see as one of the main threats or opportunities over the next 10 or 20 years, aging populations. There are the Cuban population, because they've been able to prolong life expectancy, is, like the American population, a little bit overwhelmed now with the number of people with chronic conditions, with non-communicable diseases like cancer and diabetes, and realizing that our systems have not been as well adapted as they should have to looking at how to make those longer lives productive and to be sure that we're giving appropriate care. And the fact that the Cuban health system is a community-based one and that under the Affordable Care Act and our strategy for aging, we're also looking at community facilities in the United States means there's a lot to talk about among not just the leading research organizations like NIH and CDC, but also our Administration for Community Living, Health Resources and Services Administration. Again, we can a dialogue with Cuba on how we address the same problem but using different systems, I think, can help improve both systems.
And do you have any indications that one way or the other at this point from the transition teams from the next administration that this particular program will continue?
We're hoping that the first people from the transition arrive at HHS today, so I can't speculate at all. We've prepared some documents on what we've been doing and what we would recommend, but certainly can't speak for them.
Ambassador Jimmy Colker is Assistant Health and Human Services Secretary for Global Affairs. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
You can read more and find a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.